welcome to the Jukebox Podcast from WP Tavern. My name is Nathan Wrigley. Jukebox is a podcast which is dedicated to all things WordPress, the people, the events, the plugins, the blocks, the themes, and in this case, the adoption of block patterns. If you'd like to subscribe to the podcast, you can do that by searching for WP Tavern in your podcast player of choice, or by going to wptavern.com/feed/podcast, and you can copy and paste that URL into most podcast players. If there's anything you'd like us to feature on the podcast, I'd love to hear from you and hopefully get you or your idea featured on the show. Head to wptavern.com/contact/jukebox and use the contact form there. So on the podcast today, we have Sean Blakely. Sean works for a large agency called American Eagle, a platform-agnostic organization working with enterprise clients on a wide variety of projects. After years of experiments with different approaches and collaborations between designers and developers, their team has begun to rely heavily on block patterns, and they found it's greatly increasing their productivity. It's fair to say that block patterns have revolutionized the team's approach to the entire design process. If you've not explored block patterns, they're collections of blocks which can be built by anyone. With thoughtful design, these blocks can be repurposed across pages and even different websites. Build once, deploy everywhere. We talk about how and why Sean's team decided to jump in early with block patterns. When they did, this was a somewhat risky strategy. There was no guarantee that patterns would begin to be widely adopted, but this strategy is now starting to bear fruit. It's allowing their team to work with their clients in new and unexpected ways. Clients are now working more closely with the American Eagle team in what Sean describes as less impress us and more collaborate with us. It's fostering a closer relationship with clients, which encourages them to use the block editor and patterns and have some ownership in the process. It's an interesting episode, and if you're curious about how you can start to use blocks and patterns with your clients, there's sure to be something here for you. Typically, when we record the podcast, there's not a lot of background noise, but that's not always the case with these WordCamp Europe interviews. We were competing against crowds and the air conditioning. And whilst the podcasts are more than listenable, I hope that you understand that the vagaries of the real world were at play. If you're interested in finding out more, you can find all the links in the show notes by heading over to wptavern.com/podcast. And you'll find all of the other episodes there as well. And so, without further delay, I bring you Sean Blakely. I am joined on the podcast today by Sean Blakely. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Nathan.
Sean and I have just been chatting for a few minutes, and I think we're going to be good friends.
I think you're right.
So you're at WordCamp Europe. We're currently sitting in the basement having a chat, but you did a presentation which you are now very relieved to have done. It's behind you now. What was it about?
I mean, it's a wonderful feeling to have been the post-talk feeling. It was about block patterns, the block pattern revolution. I was talking about how we're using block patterns in our creative process, how we're evolving and adapting our creative process, bringing together the designers and the developers. And we're finding that block patterns is opening up all sorts of opportunities, explore and adapt the collaborative space between designers and developers. So I was really talking about those exciting opportunities that we see today.
You're working at the helm, maybe the helm's the wrong word, but you're near the helm of a very large agency. So I guess making that transition to block patterns is a big deal. You got a lot riding on that. Tell us a little bit about the company that you work for.
So I work for a company called American Eagle. American Eagle are 700 strong. It's a large organization. It's platform agnostic. Obviously, there are dedicated teams to a number of sort of key platforms, including Sitecore and Sitefinity, but also, of course, WordPress. And that's how it's really reached that scale. What it tends to focus on is those big enterprise engagements, and it's able to address those kind of cross-platform, those big digital transformation pieces, those big integrations. And so you're quite right that, you know, as we talk about transitions in organizations of that size, it can be very challenging. But because we're building the WordPress enterprise team, we're able to explore some of these different technologies and keep pushing at the boundaries of what we're doing. We have this incredible opportunity to keep exploring WordPress at scale. And I'm sure we'll talk in a minute about the sort of headless and composable kind of paradigm. But it enables us to keep exploring, to keep pushing these boundaries, and block patterns increasingly feel like they're part of that journey and are beginning to become an important part of that journey.
I would imagine that if we asked a typical WordPress user, how do you build your website? I think there's going to be a significant proportion who maybe do it the old-fashioned way, but I feel that's dwindling, template files and all that. And then there'll be a proportion of people, probably still, I'm guessing, the majority, who are using page builders, the commercial page builders. There does seem to be, especially very recently, by that I mean maybe in the last 6 months, it does feel like there's a lot more chatter about blocks and patterns, and almost like, okay, this is a thing now, the time has come, we're going to shift over in that direction. But what would you say are the key benefits, the things that you identified in your business which made you say, oh, actually, this is worthwhile now, we'll stop doing it the way we used to do it, and we're going to start doing it with blocks? What were the key metrics that you judged that worthwhile against?
So the commercial metrics is a kind of separate piece, and we'll come back to that because it is an interesting question. But from a technical or an implementation sort of perspective, it always felt jarring when we were bringing software, proprietary software, be it a page builder or some other service, into the WordPress platform. It always felt like we were introducing something that we would either have to be pulling out of WordPress at a later date, or we're then tying our clients to this particular tool that we had chosen, or maybe us as an agency, you know, we preferred a particular page builder, and so that's the one that our clients got because that was our preferred approach. And that always felt jarring. It felt like there wasn't, you know, we weren't developing for the longevity, that we were slightly tunnel vision and narrow focused in terms of our needs as the agency. And so it always felt like we should be coming as close to core as we can, moving our dependency to WordPress itself rather than this sort of separate proprietary software. And it's been a challenging journey at times, as we were early adopters for Gutenberg, and, you know, we felt some of the pain that all of us, or many of us in the community, have felt, some of the challenges around creating custom blocks back in the day. But it was very clear that this felt like the right journey, and it was the right journey to go on. And as we thought about and talked to our clients about their experience and their experience for creating content, that goal to move from short codes and the abstraction of drop downs and filling in an input box, and then that leap of faith as you hope something has changed on the front of your website and it's going to work in the way that you hoped it would. Well, that WYSIWYG experience has been something that we've been asked for years. And of course, that's where the page builder space came from. But to be able to fulfill that in a drag and drop within the WordPress editor itself it's a great thing to be able to provide our clients with that experience, that true WYSIWYG experience. And so the goals are so clear as we're on this journey together. And so, and we'll come back to that final point around the commercial decision in terms of investing our efforts as a technical team. I mean, it was very clear that this is the longevity. This is where we're empowering our clients to own their UI, their UI components. They can start to build out some of their own UI components as well as custom blocks that we might build. And there isn't a dependency. If they want to move to, you know, they want to change their implementations, they can keep WordPress exactly the same. And that notion of switching a theme, and that a theme should be easy to change, or styling, you know, restyling, making small design changes should be relatively easy. Yeah, that's becoming true within the Gutenberg paradigm, that we can offer that longevity of architecture, of platform, and that they can iterate in terms of a design on top of that. So that's been a hugely empowering journey, that, incidentally, that we're still on, but we're thoroughly enjoying the journey. And it's, you know, every step that we take can be daunting at times, But we found the value in each and every of those steps that we've been on so far as the community working with Gutenberg.
So at the point where you made the decision to hop on, presumably you've not just said, okay, everything from now on will be based upon Gutenberg. Maybe some clients are embedded in something in the WordPress space, like a proprietary page builder. Maybe you're going to carry that on, maybe not, I don't know. But there must have been a lot of retraining, process changes, every which way for your staff. Just talk us through what that was, because obviously if you're working within your company and building websites, you want to know, what's the education piece? How am I going to learn all of this stuff? What's my company going to provide for me to make sure that I'm skilled? Was there a lot of that that had to be put into place?
There was a huge amount. There's a kind of duality here, that the first challenge was to enable developers to feel confident within React. And so feeling confident within a modern JavaScript framework. And we found that that was a hugely valuable first step to sort of, you know, allow them to ease them into familiarity with React. Once we did that, we then moved into Gutenberg specifically and sort of eased our developers into Gutenberg. And we did it in some ways from the interface, so getting familiarity with the interface. But of course, things, and we're talking maybe 2 or 3 years ago now, things were moving so quickly that actually it was often easier to actually go from the back end forward and so look at the anatomy of a block, how a block fits together. And we had some really curious developers and developers that were often looking under the bonnet and seeing how these things were constructed. And it added to that sense less of intimidation and more of awe that we're on a journey together. And actually, you know, we can be part of this dialogue. We can be part of this journey and exploring how we can evolve our processes. And I think that early understanding the value that Gutenberg, this journey, was going to provide, even when we were hesitant to put it into production, but it always felt like this was the direction we wanted to go in. We wanted to provide that extraordinary editorial content creation experience, and then of course, you know, the value that we can give to end users as well.
I'm imagining that if you had clients that were on the classic editor, there's just no downside to that. One thing is nothing like the other, so a big boost. But I'm wondering about the clients who maybe were on those page builders. How are they coping, regardless of all that, how are they coping with the UI? Because even though it is a WYSIWYG, it's kind of got some quirks still, hasn't it? The UI is a bit funky in places and things don't quite match up on the back as they do in the front. I'm just wondering how your clients and your big agency, there must be a lot of feedback coming in. How are they adopting it? Are they welcoming of it?
Yes. So they are in...
That was sounded like a qualified yes.
Well, it is a qualified yes. There is hesitation there at times because, as you're quite right to point out, there are some rough edges in the implementation. We try and make sure that we're very transparent, that this is an exciting yet evolving part of the WordPress ecosystem. You know, don't consider this as fully finished. It's still evolving and adapting. But what we're increasingly doing is focusing on an opt-in approach. So the dashboard of blocks can be very intimidating. You know, there is a huge list, particularly if you include the embed options as well. That's a huge list. If you happen to be running plugins on your site that are also introducing blocks, you can be talking about many dozens in that interface. And you and I might know the difference with a media and text block, but our clients aren't going to know that unless we take them on that journey, unless we educate them. So what we find ourselves doing increasingly is whitelisting blocks. So actually removing, and increasingly this is often a principle in enterprise when you're working with large-scale projects, that it's actually putting the guardrails in place. You know, it's having your brand library or implementation, maybe your UI components, but you're limiting the ability of the editorial team to kind of work within those guidelines, that framework. And that's how we treat Gutenberg, is that we provide those atomic building blocks, you know, those core blocks and maybe a few custom blocks as well. We then put limitations in. So those are your design system, essentially. Those are the UI, the library of UI components that our clients can use. And that's really attractive then, because it becomes very clear what the tools are that they can use to tell their stories, to tell their narratives to their users. And it's not this self-serve mentality where you're kind of building from the atoms and trying to build everything from scratch. Actually, they're sort of pre-baked for you, and you're just going down and selecting the ones that you want.
in WordPress 6.0, we've got, maybe it's not the most fleshed out of block locking features, but it does something. It puts a padlock icon there anyway, and you can unlock it. That feels like that would be a nice direction to go in as well, that particular feature. You know, the client can access this bit, but not that bit, and they can edit this bit, which our team have built, and if they don't like the text, they can just go in and do it themselves. And it's kind of empowering people to edit their own stuff, but not edit this piece.
We absolutely love this feature. And interestingly, we're actually on a huge project at the moment, a huge headless project. And we were looking at our own custom solution for doing exactly this. So what we're doing is we're bringing in 250,000 programmatically generated pages that we're injecting into Gutenberg blocks. So we're kind of generating these Gutenberg blocks. We're creating these slots in between the blocks to enable them to insert custom content, but essentially we're programmatically generating that content. And then we're locking down certain aspects. It's almost like it's a programmatically generated, templated page, if you like, which is locked, and then they can add in between these sort of sections, or indeed update some of the images, and there are certain areas that we allow them to update and some not so. And so that feature of locking blocks has been already incredibly valuable for us. And exactly as you say, it chimes with that notion of guidelines, of having a brand language, of having that visual rhythm, your design system, and then you're working within those confines of your visual language.
The reason I was talking about it being fairly basic is it can be unlocked by anybody. It doesn't matter who you are, you just click the button and you're unlocked it. But maybe in the future there'll be a more granular permissions model that it doesn't matter how many times you click the button and you're not unlocking it. That would be nice. You know, so the editor can edit this and the subscriber could edit this and the administrator can obviously edit everything. That was a much needed feature, I think.
And I think you're right. And incidentally, as we talk about maybe block patterns forming that kind of notion of templates, that maybe you and I are going to create a custom post type, and as we click into that custom post type, we've got these pre-baked templates that we can select from, and using block patterns to do that. You're exactly right that actually we can even allow editors to edit those templates, but we do have the challenge of permissions. And so we need to think about who has that meta level, almost like the super admin we could think of in terms of multi-sites. You know, who has that top level that they can edit the template? And then who at the editorial level can just edit implementations of reflections of that?
Really interesting. So let's get into the whole block pattern thing. I would be staggered if anybody listening to this hadn't heard of them at least. But nevertheless, there's probably some who haven't. So let's just address that. Tell us about block patterns. What are they? They're in use, I think, more and more. As each day goes by, there's going to be more and more use of them. But just tell us what they are briefly.
In the simplest terms, block patterns are a container for blocks. They're a kind of vessel that contain these, whichever blocks you want to allow to be within this pattern. But that's deceptively simple. And what I talk about, the analogy that I like to use, is that there are a finite number of musical notes. And so whatever your piece of music, your chosen interest is, be it Pixies DeBaser or Mozart or Beethoven, they're still utilizing that finite number of notes. And yet they can create truly extraordinary original compositions from those finite number of notes. And I think for us, Gutenberg are our notes and the patterns are our favorite songs, are those extraordinary compositions that we can create.
Here's an interesting thought. If you have a Spotify account, there's more songs than you can ever listen to. Block patterns. So in the same way we've got plugins, 50,000, 60,000, whatever the number is, there's loads of plugins. If you want a form plugin, go and pick out of the 40 over there. Is there going to be overload? If everybody's got hundreds and thousands and possibly millions in the future of patterns, the impediment to creating patterns is so low. The impediment to creating a plugin is quite high, so it's contained at roughly 50,000. But if block patterns are going to be really, really easy to create, which they are, especially with things like the pattern creator tool, then the library, the way that we download these, is presumably at some point going to be deluged. Your clients may be faced with this atrophy of, I have no idea where to begin. There are 748,000 in there and I do not even know where to start.
I think you're quite right. That sort of paralysis, choice paralysis, will undoubtedly be an issue that we need to deal with. But less like limiting the ability of people to create these block patterns, And really, what we need to do is have a way of rating those block patterns or seeing those patterns, the popularity of those patterns, the one that seem to be solving problems that maybe are achieving conversions in a greater way in your particular sector or your area. And it's having that validation. I think right now we're in the wild west of, we're just so excited. And as you say, the friction is so low for creating block patterns. But that in and of itself isn't the goal. You know, and that's not where we want to be. Where we want to be is creating truly original and amazing patterns that we can then validate against the use cases for our clients, the way that they want to introduce them into their sites. But yes, we will have a huge number of block patterns very soon.
There is some editorial on the back of that. It's not like you submit a block pattern and it's just immediately in the library. There will be a team there looking and inspecting, and hopefully if your block pattern, I can't remember what the exact reasons for dismissal were, but it was things along the lines of, if it's not really using more than one block, if it's not doing something innovative, for example, something along those lines. But given all of that, there could be this problem of just too many things to pick from.
I think you're absolutely right. And then trying to decide which patterns solve which problems and which to use, that choice paralysis will undoubtedly be an issue that as a community, we then need to start thinking about what's the value, what's the added value that block patterns are bringing, and find a way of communicating that both to us as technologists, but also to our clients.
One of the interesting ancillary bits of block patterns or blocks or WordPress in general, I don't know if you've followed this thing, but the Openverse, the idea that you can submit block patterns that have all of the images already in, they're probably placeholders. You probably won't end up using them. But I do find that's quite an interesting piece. For the first time, you'll be able to download these block patterns and you can actually stick with it. You can use that thing forever and a day and there'll be no license that you're treading on. It's totally usable. And I think that's really interesting. I've actually been taking tons of photos this week with the intention of, as soon as I get home and I've got a reliable internet, it's just to stick them onto Openverse. Then people can see pictures of Porto for free.
Beautiful. Definitely. And I think it then raises an interesting question about reusable blocks and how block patterns interact with reusable blocks. And if we have these that you can really just drop in and they're instantly displaying those images or instantly sort of showing that you don't change, you just sort of drop those in, whether that's more the direction that reusable blocks will go in, those kind of global blocks, or global entities that we use repeatedly, or whether block patterns will actually evolve into a version of that, that rather than just being templates, UI components that we reuse, maybe they will evolve into something equally like an opportunity to be global. So there's definitely areas to explore there.
When you agreed to have a podcast with me, it sounds subtle, but when I was thinking about it, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, actually, this is fairly seismic. You said that your design process in your agency, as a result of using patterns and the block editor, had moved away, I'll quote, you said it moved the expectation, and I'm guessing we're talking about the client's expectation. It's moved the expectation from impress us to collaborate with us. And I think that's really interesting because that is a big change, but it sounds like a really subtle one on the face of it. But so you are now, it's almost like do it, it's not DIY, it's more like do it with us.
It's a profound change. You're absolutely right. From being a passive consumer of that process.
Taking it off the shelf, the website's off the shelf. There it is, it's a commodity.
Exactly that. But also when we've struggled through a design process and we present that design and we've often got that big gamble moment when it's sort of da-da and hoping, fingers crossed, that client likes the designs that we've created. That's what we're trying to address, is we want to move away from these big gamble moments, these big, almost waterfall by design, as we're doing big design stages and then big build processes. And so bringing the clients in closer, often I feel that we solve thousands of micro problems in the course of the design process and the course of the development process, but we kind of hide that away. We're not very good at being communicative and transparent about all of those problems that we've solved on that journey. And as we try and bring clients in closer, we want them to own the outcomes. We want them to be on that journey of here's some problems, like framing the problem and helping them to go on that journey of, okay, there's some compromises here and there's some reasoning here that maybe we need to be more mindful of. And so when they've been part of that process, when they reach the outcomes, when we present that design, it's no longer a ta-da moment where there's surprise. Actually, they become champions of that design because they have a sense of ownership that they've bought into it because they've been part of that ideation session and part of those sessions. And so they go into their organizations and they defend those designs. They can answer any questions about what's the reasoning behind this or why is this like this? Well, they know. They've been part of those processes. Now, that's when it works beautifully. I'm not going to pretend for one moment that we've found the unicorn, that we can all rest happy in our beds, that we've solved design and development project builds. But with the right client and that right collaboration spirit, we're seeing huge value from this approach to design and development.
I'm really curious as to what that actually looks like on the ground. In other words, presumably there was a transition over to this during the pandemic. Was this like, okay, we're going to screen share on Zoom and we're going to show you what we're doing and you're going to interrupt us and tell us what you want us to do? Is it literally that they are contributing as they watch you do things and learning the process, or is there more kind of instructional things that you're sending out to them and they approve one as opposed to the other? I'm just curious what the process really, really looks like.
So there's no one size fits all. We tend to kind of move with the needs of the client, and some clients are more collaborative than others. It's sort of bubbled up to two approaches. So one might be that we are providing more regular feedback and regular check-ins. It's worth mentioning because it's often designers work in sort of isolation and they don't like to show their workings out. They don't like to show the rough edges. They want to show something that's beautiful that they've worked very hard to create. So it's often quite hard to get them to actually be more transparent in terms of that process, in terms of their building up of ideas and their iterative, internal iterative approach. And so we're increasingly encouraging that. And sometimes that might be the collaboration, is that they're seeing things much earlier. But with the right type of client, we can go much deeper. And so what we do is, and I think, Nathan, you were kind of alluding to this, is actually we create collaboration sessions. We jump on Zoom or equivalent, and we get the designers, we get the developers there, we open up CodePen or something similar, and really we start like through the conduit. We kind of play what Dan Mao calls the kind of hot potato process, where you know, maybe the designer is center stage for a moment as we're looking at some typography and maybe some color elements. Maybe we've already got a palette established from the guidelines, from a brand, existing brand guidelines. And then the developer using Tailwind, or again, something similar, you know, there's that friction to getting something on the screen is very low. We can start to explore and collaborate together. And this is where the client's opinion can start to come in. You know, well, what do you think about the use of this color in this formation? Or what do you feel about the interplay of these different elements? And so what we've found is that trying to do that at the meta level, trying to do that in a kind of more old-fashioned template-driven design, that's really challenging, because that doesn't really work until you see the whole and the interplay of all of those components. It's hard to kind of break it down. If you're truly component driven, well, then you can break off. Let's work on the hero component. And what's incredibly valuable about these sessions is the client can tell you instantly that, oh, no, we can't do that because the marketing team must have a dot, dot, dot. Or actually, we get a revenue stream from one of those. It has to be a carousel because we get a revenue stream from one of those slides. Now, that minutiae insight is very hard to unfold in a discovery and definition process. That complexity emerges over time. But if you're in that space, if you're collaborating in real time, you get those insights. You get the business objective insights coming right into the design and development process.
How do you feel about, I'm pretty sure that I know that you don't use any of these, but just as a sort of short circuit, how do you feel about these pattern libraries which have popped up in the last year or so, where you can go and you can discover template libraries and block pattern libraries? And so these are not the free open source ones that you can get through WordPress, but the proprietary ones. Have you embedded and explored any of those and decided to use them? A minute ago, you were talking about the fact that you were free of all of that with Gutenberg. And I just wondered if you'd strayed into any of that or had any thoughts.
So I felt for a long time that I don't like to bring proprietary software into WordPress, as we should all be very mindful of creating dependencies. And that was always true of page builders. It was always a concern that we're creating a dependency, a future dependency for our clients, you know, whatever our choice of page builder may have been. And so the exact principle, the same principle applies here, that we're really creating a dependency. And exactly as you say, Nathan, this is a young and evolving and adapting area, and maybe we back the wrong horse. Yeah. You know, maybe the one that we choose is the one that just deprecates into GitHub, and then we've suddenly got this dependency in one or two of our sites that we have to maintain, and you know, the support desk need to learn this particular implementation. So yeah, it's always interesting to explore. It's always interesting to see what the community are creating, both in terms of commercial offerings as well as open source. But I'm very mindful that it's an infinite game. We're not looking for those quick shortcuts in terms of implementing something today. And then we're thinking about that partnership with our clients, that life cycle of a platform, you know, of a true solution to their needs. And that almost invariably means trying to stay as close to core as we can. We're trying to reduce dependencies. We're trying to reduce any sort of proprietary dependencies. With those sort of parameters in mind, it's not really been part of our journey. And I don't, as yet, you know, we haven't seen something that has bubbled up that has seemingly been so good that we feel like it's worth taking in that compromise.
Sean Blakely, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you.